Good morning, diners and travelers. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. And today's adventure is we're going to bring you back with us to our visit to Italy with a program which we're calling Friuli Part 1. Where do we start, Rabbit?
Well, we started at the Venice Airport, of course, and then we motored about 100 kilometers. We had a wonderful long lunch. More about that later. But our real destination was a fascinating project developed by Joe and Lydia Bastianich to have both wineries and accommodation in the part of Italy.
And a wonderful restaurant.
Yeah, and the part of Italy that Lydia called home before she came to the United States. The project's called Orsoni.
Which means bear, big bear.
Big bear, yeah. And
there are bears all over the place.
We're starting off with Andre Serbizzo, the general manager, and Eduardo and Kelly, the chefs.
I look around this beautiful establishment and I see quite a few bears, heads, sculptures, paintings. Orsoni is the name of the restaurant and also of the rooms above. And tell me this, I'm going to ask Eduardo Valle, who is the chef of Orsoni, what's the difference between an orso and an Orsoni?
Well, orso is a bear and Orsoni is a big bear, no? And that's what we're trying to do here, no? A big restaurant, no? Also, could be, you know, we're trying to do something big, no? That's why Joe and Lydia, the first restaurant in Italy, in the first restaurant outside the United States, they want to be something big. That's why we call Orsoni.
And it's the name of the hill behind here, too. This was, I believe, an apartment beforehand. I'm going to ask Andrea Sprizzo, who's actually a native from, I understand, from Friuli, from Udine, which we saw today, which is a lovely city. Tell us a little bit about the operations of the restaurant and the room.
Hello, how are you, everybody? So basically, as you already introduced about a little bit everything, so it's a restaurant and taverna has been shared in two different parts of the restaurant. So we have a fine dining room with where we serve a la carte and tasty menu. Plus we have the taverna. That's where we try to emulate simple taverna in like New York City, where you can eat in a more casual way, or in cocktail, wines, a good beer as well, to more in a casual environment. So
we had wonderful, wonderful French fries last night and a steak sandwich and a gorgeous green salad, and the place filled up, even your private room there. How many accommodations do you have upstairs?
Actually, right now we have 5 rooms. That's what we operate right now. Maybe we are working to have the 6th room. Yes, we try to be more operate with the 6th room. Very soon we will, but at the moment we have 5 rooms, yes. Okay, you have breakfast in the restaurant as well.
Now, you manage this whole thing, but now you spent time, I understand, in New York City with the Bastianiches. Where were you?
I arrived in the United States in 2006 at Del Posto restaurant, the 4-star restaurant in New York Times, in 2006 until 2013, the moment I left with Chef Eduardo to open the restaurant in Italy.
Did you love coming back here, and what did your family say?
Coming back here was like a bonus after a very hard years working very hard every day. So basically coming back home with this new project was fantastic, and I make also my family happy. That's maybe the greatest things as well.
I should mention that the rooms are lovely, lovely, spacious, airy, well-appointed, with really great beds. I know that because I've collapsed a couple of nights in there. Let's talk a little bit to Eduardo Valle and also his sous chef, who is Kelly June. And Eduardo, you are not from here. You are from Madrid.
I'm from Madrid, Spain. I born there. I work a little bit. Then after I travel a little bit around Europe. I work in Germany in a 5-star hotel in a Garmisch-Partenkirchen. It's 90 kilometers by an hour by driving from Munich. And then after I moved to London in a Japanese restaurant. And then after I make the big jump to New York. And I was in New York the last 10 years almost. I work in La Caravelle, some mythics in New York City. La Caravelle. I work for Daniel Boulud in one of his restaurants. DB Bistro Modern, Fiamma, Suba. And in the last time last 4 years, I was in Del Posto with Joe and Lydia and Mario Batali, no? And well, this is an amazing experience, my career, you know. And I fall in love with the Italian cuisine. Also, Italian cuisine, because the post is Italian cuisine with a New Yorker sensibility, you know. So it's kind of a little bit more, no. Right now we're moving to, we are here in Italy, and we are bringing a little bit New York also here, no.
Now you fell in love with somebody else too, and she's sitting on my left side. Kelly, welcome to On the Menu. Tell us something about the concept behind the menu that you present here in the fine dining room at Orsoni.
Hello, thank you. Well, I think we try to bring an international flair to the menu. I mean, we're trying to use as many local products as possible, but we also want to incorporate some different techniques, some kind of, I don't want to say exotic, but, you know, some kind of a little bit more flavor to the area. So we're using things like daikon. We've used fresh wasabi and black garlic, things that you can't really find around here, but we've managed to find and we've managed to procure from some people around here. And it's been really fun to see people's reactions, for example, for tasting a green curry for the first time or what is black garlic. I think we're really bringing New York and the world to Friuli. So it's been really fun.
What's the customer base like? Obviously, a lot of the time it's people who stay here, but you can't maintain a restaurant with five rooms, so there's only probably 10 possible diners every evening. So you're drawing from the community. Are people coming once, or are they coming every 2 weeks, or are they coming three times a week? Now, what's it like?
An answer I can give to you, actually. So basically, of course, the most of our clients are local. That's they try to be here once a month. That's a good result for us. So people, so we have 10 tables, so we don't have a lot of tables. And you know, in Italy, you don't turn table like in New York City. So we have a huge seating, and then you have to manage it. With the rooms, lately we see we have a lot of people from outside, like tourists. They came maybe from Veneto, from Lombardia, from, you know, we have people moving around like 3-4 hours. They can drive, spend the weekend here, have a nice experience with the dinner, and then they can stay overnight to the hotel, and plus they go back home and then they follow day. So Italy is not the city between. There are no huge distance that can be United States. You have to maybe sometime fly 3 hours.
Looking at this kitchen, this never used to be a demonstration or a kitchen, an open kitchen. That's not very Italian, and this one is stunning. Tell us about this.
We have I think it's sometimes like a theater, you know? The guests are looking at us, how we cooking, how we moving. Sometimes they are not eating, no? That's very, very funny, you know? Looking more us than the food, no? No, but it's a molteni. They brought the stove from France, and 1,400 pounds, one whole piece. I think the kitchen looks really organized, really clean. I think the people in Italy, or in Friuli here, they have the opportunity to see different style of cuisine, and see us on the, what do you say in English, on the in action, you know.
Now you have two different approaches to your menus. You have a tasting menu and you have an a la carte menu. Could you just walk us through some of the highlights of the menu? Yes, and I also see you have a vegetarian tasting menu, which is very popular. What are some of the outstanding dishes that you're known for?
You said before, like it's Italian restaurant with the Italian roots, you know, it's the base of Italian cuisine. But we're trying to bring a little bit New York here, you know, America, you know. The same like Joe and Lydia, they brought Italy, Friuli to America. Now they want to bring a little bit New York, you know. And so we kind of having like a little bit international and a little bit of, not everywhere, but simple, not too many things. 6 courses in each, and appetizers, 6 pastas, and 6 secondes, but good, no? We have a tasty the vegetarian menu. It's kind of interesting because here in the land, Friuli, the land of the polenta, the land of the salumi, the land of the so many, one of the prosciutto San Daniele, you know, musetto. There's so many people, like we thought, more than we thought, like they are vegetarian, no? So when we launched one day the vegetarian menu here, we didn't expect like that this people, they are very well, they're coming very often, some vegetarians in the area, and we're trying to change the menu as we can, because here one of the things is like we work with the market, of course, but when it's not local, when the local products are available, we use it, and when they are not available, because they are not in the season, you cannot get any more, no? So this is very important for a cook to change the menu very often, to always, you know, do not have something always moving, no? And then that's why make the some of the guests come often, not to see new techniques and new.
What is one item that's always on the menu that you can't change?
Well, there is right now, you know, it's a kind of a little bit of the orecchiette, probably, maybe, I think, one of the things. The orecchiette is a kind of from Puglia, no? Kind of far from here, but unusual here in Friuli, no? Here, so many amazing pastas, very unusual, no? Also, we do it with a grano arso. It's a burnt flour. So it's a flour that 200 years ago, all the people that are working in the fields, they didn't have money to get normal flour. So they pick all the burnt grains, because after the harvest, they burn all the fields to let it rest the field for the next year. So after burn, the people take all the burnt grains and they make flour. No? That flour was dark and smoky. And then after the years, it's more expensive now than the normal flour. No? It's almost double. So we do the orecchiette, it's a super traditional with a grano arso. And the people are really, really, you know, this is kind of something like that we cannot change, you know, because it's very initial here, no? And the people coming to eat this.
Well, I'm really looking forward to this. So you're not putting Spanish food on this menu?
Well, we're having a little bit of things. We're having a rice, no? And the rice, we have something like the title of this rice is rice, corn, and ocean, no? And seafood, no? So we use some clams, we use some saffron and a little bit of chorizo to give us that touch of Spain, you know.
Yeah, Kelly, what's your favorite item on the menu?
Well, I'm a antipasti girl. You know, I love, you know, anything kind of vegetal and light. I'm going to have to say right now I'm loving the langoustine. It's a crudo of langoustine has a sauce made with burrata and chive oil. And a little bit of creme, so it's kind of creamy, and you get a little herbaceousness from the chive oil and a little bit of spice in the background from the creme, from the horseradish. And then there's also some botarga, which is a little funky, and then black summer truffles, which is a little earthy, and some coral oil from the langoustine. So it's a really good mix, and it's kind of funky but delicious and hearty, because you get a little bit of fattiness from the burrata. So that's one of my favorites right now.
You didn't tell us where you came from and how do you like it here. It's a little, it's in the country, huh?
Well, I'm from New York. So, you know, I'm born and raised in Queens. And, you know, New York City is 20 minutes from my house. And when I first came here in February, I was a little concerned, you know, with Wayne. It was dark and mysterious, and I was used to lights and action, and there was none of that until we saw Udine, thank God, which is 20 minutes from here. But it's beautiful. You know, it's a nice change. I spent all my life in New York. So, yeah, I'm Italian inside, and people look at me because, you know, my parents are Korean. So, what do you mean you're Italian inside? You know, I grew up watching Lydia on her show, and I really learned a lot from watching her cook. And so it's kind of like a coming home for me, because I also worked a little bit on her show, helping her out. And so I think of it as a coming home, and it's really cool, and I love the history of Italy, the food, the tradition, the respect, and the simplicity. So it's beautiful, and I get to do it with my best friend, Eduardo Valle.
I have to say something. I brought her one time to Toledo. Toledo is a city in Spain, like an hour driving. It's a super, you know, old city, you know, you can jump in the time 500 years back. And she was walking on the streets, looking, and oh my God, so beautiful. Looks like Siena. Totally, no? So that's when she said, like, she's a Korean, I believe, I can't tell, no? Her parents are from Korea, but she's a New Yorker, but the heart is Italian, eh?
Well, I'm looking forward to tasting the food. I've eaten Lydia's food for I don't know how many years, and I think you probably had a lot of fun training with her because she really enjoys cooking and also teaching. Well, we're looking forward to it, and thank you for taking time to talk to us. I know that you have to get back to the kitchen. You too. You're like lovebirds. Woohoo! Thanks so much, and also thank you, Andrea. Oh, Andrea, before we conclude, tell us a little bit about how difficult is it getting here, and where are we, and how difficult, you must fill up very quickly on weekends, because we were here on a Wednesday night and in the taverna, and it was jammed.
Basically, we are happy that's every day busy, so the operation doing very good, but so everybody is welcome. So it's not that hard to arrive, especially for you. You arrive in Venice. If you want, we can arrange to come to pick you up. It's not be a problem. It's 1 hour and 20 minutes away from here. It's not hard. It's a good direction to have here, but, you know, ask everything you need. You can call us, our phone number. Also, you can check our website, orsone.com. So don't hesitate. We're waiting for you. We love you, so we make you happy.
But if people are looking during, especially the good weather months of the year, they should book well ahead to be able to stay here on the weekend.
In summertime, it's kind of busy also for the, unfortunately, we have only 5 rooms, so basically you have to plan ahead. August is busy. I mean, you can have fun also in July, also in the harvest time. September is good.
Well, once again, thank you. Thank you all for joining us, and so to dine.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back. I thought that before we go on, I should clarify that I don't mean that there are live bears actually roaming around the property. I just am noting that the Bastianiches have found fabulous artwork, sculptures, paintings, prints of bears. That's the theme of the place, Orsone.
And it's also the name of the place.
It's
the name
also
of the
name
hill.
Of the place. So at one time there were bears, but I mean, you don't have to worry about bears.
Okay, you don't have to worry about bears. You do have to worry about finding your way, but that's another story we won't fill this program with.
But what about the wines? That's really a highlight of this whole
Well, the most important aspect of this entire project, and the thing that got it off the ground, was the fact that young Joe Bastianich decided that he wanted to take on the challenge of making Italian wines in Italy and selling them in Italy too. So buying first and then a second vineyard. It's a fascinating story. And Wayne Young, who's been with the project since the beginning, is here to tell us about it. Talk about dreams come true. Here on the menu, we're sitting in the middle of one right now, looking out through the window. It's going to be evening soon, and we're not going to be able to see the terraces of the vines that are the prize of Joe Bastianich and Lydia Bastianich here in Friuli in northeastern Italy. But more than the wonderful view and the wonderful tasting that we just shared with Wayne Young, who's the marketing director but also an extraordinarily knowledgeable wine man who's sort of in charge of things around here. Tell us the story, Wayne, of how all this came together, because the last time we heard about it 10 years ago, there was one vineyard, no place to stay, and since then, a lot has happened.
Well, yeah, certainly a lot has happened in the last 16 years that the winery has been in existence. We started making wine here in Friuli Venezia Giulia in 1998. That's when I came over for the first harvest. I was a sommelier with Joe's restaurant, Becco, in New York, decided to do something different, and he sent me over here. So thinking I was staying 6 months, 16 years later, I'm still here. The winery started off with about 12 hectares of vineyards in the Butrio area, which is where we visited yesterday. If you remember, one of the warmer areas of the Friuli Colle Orientale wine region. And not so many years ago, they also invested in a property about the same size here in Cividale, which is about 10 miles north of the Butrero Vineyards, a cooler area. So it's very interesting to have these two different microclimates, one cooler, one warmer, where we can really balance out the wine. So now we had about 24 hectares that are basically the property of the Bastianich family.
The thing that's really interesting, it struck me the first time we visited, and it struck me again today because this property is the same, is the terracing that you use. That was already here. What was it here for a long, long time before that?
Well, the most important areas in Friuli are always the hillside areas. So in order for you to cultivate them to the best of your ability, you have to create the terraces. There has been viticulture in the hills of Friuli for 2,000 years. I doubt that the terraces that we see today are of that age, but the terraces that we have here are anywhere from 70 to 80 years old, maybe a little bit older. A lot of our vineyards have been re-terraced and restructured, but really the terraces are what make the hillside areas of Friuli, with their special soil, their rocky style soil, the most important areas for making wine here in Friuli.
Let's do this the simple way, which is we'll talk first of all about all the white wines. And then what color of wines will we talk about after that?
Red would probably be that would be the most logical choice. Yes, red wines.
It's interesting that this part of the world is indeed best known for its white wines, and some of the white wines are from grapes that are traditional and developed in this area, and some of them are wines based on grapes that came in from elsewhere. So take us through the portfolio, Wayne, if you would.
Well, the interesting thing about Friuli, and I think it's difficult to sort of talk about why there are these different grape varieties here without understanding a little bit of the history. The crazy thing about Friuli is that you have this mix of indigenous grape varieties, things like Ribolla Gialla on the whites and Rifosco and Schioppettino for the reds. And they're planted in the same vineyards with things like Merlot and Chardonnay and Sauvignon Blanc, which are French varieties. And the whole reason that this came about was because after Phylloxera wiped out all of the vineyards here in Friuli, which was a little bit later than the rest of France and the rest of Europe, towards the end of the 1800s, the area was mostly under the control of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. So the Habsburgs were in control here, and the French varieties were very fashionable. So rather than replanting with the local varieties, the people who owned land here decided that they were going to bring in the French varieties like Cabernet Franc and Cabernet Sauvignon and Chardonnay and Pinot Blanc and these things. So it makes sort of an interesting mosaic of different grape varieties, I think probably more interesting than a lot of different wine regions in Italy in general. Friuli has this mix of France and indigenous.
And then we have the great Tokaj controversy. That's an interesting one. Give us the brief version of the story.
Well, the short version of the story is that in 2007, we were no longer able to use the word Tokaj in association with the white grape variety Tokaj Friulano. That was probably, and still is, the sort of the emblem of the region. If you had to pick one grape variety, it really is it sort of shows the character of Friuli and white wine. Yes, we tried to fight this decree from the European Union that forced us to change the name. There was some story that maybe the grape variety was brought to the Hungarian region and that the name Tokaj actually came from Friuli. But unfortunately, we lost that fight, and now the wine that we used to call Tokaj Friulano is simply called Friulano.
And very delicious, I might say. And I compared it a lot to the white wines of Campania and the white wines of Sicily, and I think you agreed.
I would say that the thing that really ties those regions together is this vein of minerality. The great wines from Campania, the great white wines from Sicily, these very minerally soils, those are sort of the characteristics that bring it together.
Now, this is a really growing operation. This is not just a whim to buy one vineyard and then buy a second one. You have plans to get a whole lot bigger, right?
Well, the plan is not to get a whole lot bigger. I think the facility that we have has the potential of doing about a little bit more than 300,000 bottles a year. We're not quite at that point yet. We're at about 270,000, 280,000 bottles per year now. So we're getting to sort of the maximum that we can do here. We have 35 hectares of vineyards, 24, which I said before, are under our property, but we also rent about a dozen hectares that we care for from the beginning to the end of the year, which really, really helps us out in sort of flushing the operation. As far as getting much bigger is concerned, no, but what we're constantly doing is we're constantly improving. We're looking to improve our facilities. We're looking to replant the vineyards that we already have to maximize quality and also maximize production.
But God, we never really did a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 through the white wines. So let's do that first, and then we'll take 7, 8 and so on as the red ones, and then we'll come back and talk a little bit about some of those.
Well, the monovarietal wines that we produce here in Friuli are the, especially for the North American market, Pinot Grigio, and then there is a Friulano and a Sauvignon Blanc. Those are the three most important monovarietal whites that we make here. They're all bottled under a line that's called Adriatico, which was a concept that was run by Joe, created by Joe a few years ago. There are two more wines in that line, one that comes from Slovenia that is made by our good friend Marian Simcic, which is a Ribola Gialla, and another wine that comes from Istria, which is Lydia's homeland, which is a Malvasia Istriana. And the idea was to create three indigenous white wines from three indigenous white grape varieties from three masters of their producers in their lands. So those are the five monovarietal white wines that we make. There are two high-end white wines. There is the Vespa Bianco, which is probably our most famous wine, and the whole reason why Joe got involved with making wine here in Friuli was to create a great white blend that could sit on the table with the best white wines in all of Europe. It's a blend of Chardonnay and Sauvignon, about half and half, with 10% of the grapes being Picolite, a local grape variety mostly known for being a dessert wine, but we vinify it as a regular white wine. Those wines are vinified half in stainless steel and half in 4,000-liter oak casks, blended together about another year after the vinification, and then spends another year in the bottle. Last but not least, Plus, which is 100% Tokaj from a 70-year-old vineyard, 10% of the grapes are dried for about a month to really give an extra layer of complexity to this very special Tokaj that we only make about 6,000 bottles a year.
So if you can lay your hands on that wine and have it with pudding, you'll be a very happy camper. Now, we have a good friend, Gary Eberle from Paso Robles, who always says the first duty of a wine is to be red. So obviously red wines cannot be left out. So let's visit those. We didn't actually taste those yet. We're going to taste those with dinner, but tell us about them anyway.
Well, the two main red wines that we make here, the Vespa Rosso, which, like the Vespa Bianco, is a blend. It's about 50% Merlot, which does great here, a transplanted variety that has really flourished in Friuli due to the clay coming into the soil. 30% Refosco, a local grape variety, which compensates for the lack of sort of acidity and tannic structure that Merlot can have in warmer climates. The last 20% is a mix of Cabernet Sauvignon and a little bit of Cabernet Franc, barrel-aged for about a year and a half to 2 years in French barrique, blended and then aged in the bottle for another year. And then last but not least, the Calabrone, which, like the Plus wine, is only made in the best vintages, made in very small quantities, only about 6,000 bottles per year, 70% Refosco, half dried grapes and half vinified normal, 10% Schioppettino, all dried grapes, 10% Merlot, and 10% Pignolo, which is a local grape variety. Very fussy, very tannic, very structured, but that 10% really gives the Calabrone the structure that it needs. 2 years oak barrel, all new oak barrels.
Yes. The good news, ladies and gentlemen, listeners around the world, is if you come to Friuli and you sit at Orsoni, you can sample all of them. You will not be so fortunate around the rest of the world. The wines are in wide distribution. Tell us, Wayne, about where people might expect to be able to find things like Vespa White and Vespa Red and the other varietals that we talked about.
Well, our biggest market, obviously, is the United States. We are distributed in about 40 states at this point in the United States, so it's fairly easy to find the wines there, apart from some of the rarer bottles like Plus and Calibrone. And we're also distributed in 30 countries around the world. That's important. And our second most important market, which is important to mention, is here in Italy. About 20% of our production is sold inside of Italy. And this was something very important to Joe and Lydia when they decided to start making wine here, was that they didn't want to be Americans who sort of came here and sort of brought all the wine outside. They really thought it was very important to become part of the restaurant and food culture here in Italy as well as the United States. So there is a little link on our website at bastianich.com where you can click on there, and there's a full list of our distributors by state and by country. You can contact them to find the wines wherever you're living.
Spell out Bastianich.
Bastianich is BASTIANICH.com.
Wayne, thank you so much for your hospitality while we've been here, because you've been an organizer for us of many of our adventures here, and we really appreciate that, don't we, sweetheart?
Yes. Thank you for my one word.
Anne's getting mad at me because she didn't get a word in edgeways, but we'll take care of that in due course, because we have some more gentlemen from Orsoni who are going to come and talk to us very soon. But Wayne, in the meantime, thank you so much. We wish you lots of success. We wish you safe travels, because we know you're headed to your native land again in the very near future. And I'm sure we're going to hear more and more and more of the Bastianich story as you've told it today. The thing that impressed me the most about all the things you've talked about, aside from the quality of the wines, is the respect that you've been able to get throughout Italy. I think that really says something for the quality of what it is you're trying to do.
Thank you very much. That's very important to us, and I really appreciate your visit. And it's a pleasure meeting you both. And I hope to see you on the other side sometime. The next time I pass through the Pittsburgh area, I'd love to love to see you again somewhere in the United States. So thanks for the opportunity to tell a little bit of our story here, and I hope to meet you again in the future.
And we'll be back after a short break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back. One of the highlights of going to Friuli is visiting Walter Scarbolo. His winery is excellent, and also his restaurant, La Frasca. And he's an absolute doll. Gorgeous blue eyes, and just so hospitable. And, well, what can you say? We had a five-hour lunch. I mean, that was kind of unusual.
The interview was included in the five hours elapsed. See if you can figure out whether we did it at the beginning or the end. But here's Anne talking to Walter.
We're back in a place that we actually fell in love with, if you could believe, 10 years ago, and we're back, and we're at a restaurant that we loved 10 years ago and still love, called La Frasca, talking to our good friend, Walter Scarbolo, and also we have another guest here who is, I'm going to call him a facilitator, although he is a communications person with the Bastianich Winery, and that's Wayne Young. But let's start with, I would say, Walter, you're known for your pig things, you're known for your salumi, but we had the most splendiferous meal today, including seasonal mushrooms and so on. Just give a rundown quickly, because our listeners like call it food porn. They want to know individually what we ate and what consisted of the dishes. Just give us an idea of some of the things we ate.
Okay, today, September 2nd, we are still in summertime, but unfortunately the weather is not exactly what the summertime we are used to. And so today I suggested our friends to taste the ingredients, fall ingredients, correct? And so today we tested the salumi, homemade salumi that we produce at home, like soppressa. We tested the costa con il filetto, is with inside the fillet of pork, aged at least 1 year, and we tested also.
I wanted to stop you because you still have your own pigs.
My father owned a small farm, cows, pigs, make wines, and he taught me how to do it. And I did this for years, especially making wines and raised to transform these wonderful animals in salumi. I did this for years, but unfortunately from 4 years ago, I had to stop. The tornado demolished my winery, the house. How do you say the house where you were raised? So I had to stop to raise the pigs. But a friend of mine helps us to in the winery, in the vineyard, and in the garden that he lives in our village. He has the pig sty, and he raised the pigs for us, for me, and as we were used to do it. And so we butcher the pigs in the old house. My father taught me, we butcher the pigs when are very heavy, so at least 250 kilos, I don't know how it means in pounds, but when the meat is very ripe, mature, so when the salumi that you make have consistency, flavor, deep concentration of character of the animal, when you age this salumi for 1 year, 1 year and a half, you would find tense and very incredible taste in the mouth, especially in the nose, in this salumi. So we don't erase anymore. We cannot with that. We don't have any more possibility. But we continue to make the salumi every winter.
You introduced right after the salumi something I had never had before, which you called mountain vegetables.
In the Friulian mountains, are located in Carnia. Carnia is the name of the north part of Udine province. And in the mountains, in our mountains, every winter snow. And the mountains are not so high. And in the spring, when the snow, the nature starts to grow up. And it's like a miracle, you know. Every plant can break, and we find the shoots start to grow up. And some special wild radicchio or vegetables you can find. And those are amazing if are being harvested in the special time, in perfect timing. And today we tested the three different kind of wild vegetables. Radicchio di montagna, and the dandelion, white dandelion, and wild asparagus. Those vegetables grow up Carnia mountains, and it's possible to find only in the short time in the spring. And we buy this from the local people, from the Carnia people. We boil it in water and vinegar, and then we leave to age in the under the oil, Friulian oil, with the leaves that give the aromatic leaves, you know, and herb. And after a few months, better after 1 year or 6 months, these wild vegetables are incredible to paint, to do a pairing with salumi and Friulian wines, no, like Friulano.
Well, you said it was a special mushroom season, and we couldn't get enough of those. But I mean, first you introduced an eggplant dish, which was wonderful. And then we moved on to some more mushrooms. Tell us about the kinds of mushrooms that you were talking about. Porcino.
In our restaurant, we use we want to use only local products. We want to use more products, if possible, from our farm. And what we don't produce, we buy from friends in the village, if they have what we need to cook, or we move outside, but looking for the ingredients with character, with are able to speak about how special is our Friuli region. Mushrooms comes from the mountains, of course, and we buy the mushrooms from the Carnia area. It's not so far from here. From Lauzacco is the village where I born, where I live, where I run our restaurant, where I make wines. And from here to Carnia, there are only 30 miles. And we are used to go to buy the mushrooms in a specialized store that he collects the mushrooms that the Carnia people harvest and bring to him. He checks the quality, divide from the supreme, first, second class. And we go twice a week to buy the mushrooms, because you know that to appreciate the quality, the flavor of mushrooms is important, that they have to be fresh to eat, or you have to leave to age on the oil, but we don't do that. So the mushrooms come from the porcini, especially the porcini comes from the Carnia.
I was in love with pasta dish. Tell us about that.
Pasta is homemade. We have old pastas we make, the chefs prepare every day. Today we tested the ravioli made with potato flour. Very light, incredible. The combination from the potatoes, pasta, and filled with the fresh ricotta from Lavariano, is a small village not so far from here, and mixed with the porcini mushrooms. In tub, just a couple of finferli, another variety of local mushrooms, and then we had the tagliatelle with porcini. Simple. You know, to appreciate the quality of all ingredients is important to use less products to add as possible. So if the ingredients are good, full of character, personality, able to speak about the terroir, you don't need to use any else. Just a little good oil, just a little salt and pepper, nothing else.
Now, Wayne, you really enjoyed your meal. I want you to sort of chirp in here. You were really crazy about the polenta.
Well, before I came to Friuli, I never really liked or ate much polenta. And I remember the moment that I sort of had my epiphany was when I was working with Marion Burroughs, who was a journalist for the New York Times. And she came here to do a story about polenta. And I think in about 3 days with Marion, I probably ate something like 5 or 10 pounds of polenta. And I discovered that there was a difference in the types of polenta that you can find. And the polenta that Walter has here is this polenta that's made with a lot of what they call here the crusca. So a lot of it's sort of stone ground and very sort of more of a whole grain type of polenta. And I really, really enjoy that type of polenta better than the very refined kind of, fake yellow.
And Walter, the beef.
The beef that we tasted today, unfortunately, is not from Friuli. It's not from Friuli. We have also Pezzata Rossa Friulana on the menu. But I'm very proud, I'm very happy to be Friulian, but would be like to say we produce a good Barbera or Barolo in Friuli. We can't, no? In Friuli we make wonderful white wines and also some red, but not like Barolo. So, in Friuli we have special race of cow, Pezzata Rossa, but we found this wonderful meat that comes from Poland, and it's a special race that has the fat shared in the meat. It's not like Angus or like Pezzata Rossa. Usually the Angus or Pezzata Rossa, they have the fat outside of the fillet, no? You understand me? Correct? And this race has the fat shared, how do you say?
Spread out.
Yeah, in the meat. So when you cook this meat,
marbled.
Thank you, Wayne. When this meat comes from the farm located in the northeast of Poland, in front of the Baltic Ocean, and are only females that don't produce baby cows. So they don't produce also milk. So in this farm, they leave these cows to live free. They eat only grass, and they seed also the sugar beets. They seed for these cows. So they eat the grass, and that this grass is salty because it's in front of the ocean. And they eat also the sugar beet. And they work all day. Inside of the farm they have also these animals never move it by trucks or trains. And so when they go inside to be butcher, no, correct? They don't know where they go. So they are relaxed, no, like have what happened usually in the industrial farm. And so this meat is wonderful because the meat is soft, full of flavor. And the fat that is in the meat allow this meat to become more gently, not sweet, but more delicate and intense. But we are very proud also to serve the steaks, braised meat from the local cows, the Pezzata Rossa Friulana. Today we had another choice.
And of course, lots of porcini mushrooms. We're getting down to something that I think we're all looking forward to. Is we had one of the best spreads of wines that I've had in a long time. Then I'm going to turn this over to Peter because he's the wine person.
Well, there will be pictures. If you don't go to OTM in pictures regularly, you should go there today to find out just exactly how many bottles of wine we broached. But let's focus our attention on things that really stand out about the wines of Friuli Venezia Giulia, because it's not a well-known region for the production of wines. In a way, it's a region of wines that are discarded, that are really taken out and say, well, who needs Pinot Grigio? This is really not a very interesting wine. It's really rather watery and tasteless. Well, turns out that just a little bit before we came here, the Wall Street Journal on May 23rd, 2014, and the San Francisco Chronicle on June 3rd, 2014, tasted Pinot Grigio wines from around the world and concluded that those that came from Friuli were quite superior. And both articles, the common thing about both articles is they have wonderful pictures of the wines that we drank today. So first of all, tell us a little bit about the Pinot Grigio, especially the ones with the coppery color.
Thank you for this question. Thank you to give me the opportunity to spend some words about the Friulian Pinot Grigio that has very unique, special to say. I don't know if you know, but Friuli is located in the northeast side of Italy, where the Alps finish. The Alps are the mountains that divide Italy to the other country of north of Europe. They divide Italy to the France, the Switzerland, Austria, and Slovenia. And where the Alps finish in the east side of our region starts the hills. This hill's name is Collio and Casso. And this is are important not because because there they make wonderful wines, but these hills are like big open door in front of east of you. And this is very important for quality of wine, Friulian wines. Why? Because from that door, in summertime, unfortunately not this year, every night the fresh winds come through the sills, refreshing the air. In the south we have the Adriatic Sea, the ocean, and the ocean is the resource of warm breezes marine that in the afternoon comes to dry the air, you know. And Alps that are in back in the north side are like a shoulders, a protection of for our region. We have Friuli is narrow from the Adriatic Ocean to the Austria border. There are 60 miles. It's narrow, very small. It's like a boutique our region because we have different combinations from soil, climate, and microclimate. These conditions are important to make good wines because with this changing of temperature from the day to the night, with this fluctuation of temperature from the day to the night in summertime, we have the opportunity to leave to ripe the grapes longer in the vineyard, because during the night the vines stop to ripe the grapes. But these cold winds allow to have a more concentration of minerality in the grape, aromatics components. But what is important is that the tempi di maturazione, the ripeness time, is longer. And we have to remember that longer is the time of maturation, much more time the roots have to continue to nurture the grapes, no? And so inside of the bunch we find more minerals, more components that give the stamp and the character of the grapes. That is unique condition that we have in our region. And in Friuli, we produce very low quantity of wines. It's one of the smaller regions in Italy about dimension, population, wine production, too. And Pinot Grigio is important for Friuli. We have been the first region in Italy after in the world after France where the Pinot Grigio has been cultivated. So even we know that is not our indigenous, but we almost feel it that it is, because the story of Pinot Grigio in Friuli is very long. And so we know which character Pinot Grigio has. We know what Pinot Grigio means, and unfortunately for this wonderful wine, there are so many good representatives of Pinot Grigio wines in the world. Too many lemon water wines that have nothing to do with the Friulian Pinot Grigio character. And what we can defend the Friulian terroir, only making wines able to represent terroir, characteristic of the varietal and personality of the people is making these wines. And the wine for me is the ambassador, the true ambassador of the terroir. Correct? You understand me? And so we have to be able to give the wine this opportunity to speak about terroir and varietal. Pinot Grigio that we produce in Friuli is full of body, concentration of flavor, minerality. It's not a lemon water wine. The mine want to be that. My Pinot Grigio, I would like to be able to make Pinot Grigio, to make all the wines, but especially Pinot Grigio, flag in the sand, you know, to be able to speak about our region around in the world. And this is, to make wines means to do a mission, you know, you understand? And because we have only one option a year to make wines, so we have to be forced to make wines with character and personality that they want to do. And
about Clamato? Oh yeah, we were going to talk just a little bit about the wine that's a Pinot Grigio that looks almost as dark a color as rosé.
Don't confuse Ramato with rosé, because Ramato is exactly opposite than rosé. To make rosé, you use red grapes, and you run white vinification. You harvest the clusters of red grapes, Merlot, what else. You put in the press, you get the juice already pink, and you leave to ferment as you do when you make white wines. To make Ramato, that Ramato means copper, and copper is the true color of the Pinot Grigio grapes. When you look the classes of Pinot Grigio ripe, seems to be more Pinot Noir than Pinot Blanc. And it's dark, it's purple. That is the true color of the Pinot Grigio grapes. And to make Pinot Grigio Ramato, we run the red vinification, but before to do it, we leave to ripe the grapes a week longer in the vineyard, the grapes, because it's very important that the seeds inside of the bunch become brown, exactly what you do when you make red wines. Why? Because since we leave to ferment juice and skins together a week, if the seeds are not ripe, you risk that the alcohol takes bitter tannins. So we leave to ripe a week longer in the vineyard. We do meticulous selection of every single cluster. We harvest by hand the clusters, of course, and we destemming the clusters and we put in the tank, in stainless steel tank, juice and skin to ferment together. 6, 7, 8 days, depends. And we do frequently pump overs. What it means? We move the juice from the bottom of the tank in top of the tank where the skins are, because during the fermentation the CO2 forces the skins to stay in top. But we moving the juice from the bottom in top, the juice crossing through the skins extract color, of course, but tannins, polyphenols, and all the components we have in the skins, they give the stamp and the character of this wine. For me, Ramato has been opportunity for the people that are used to drink Pinot Grigio to discover something different. Has been a flag for Friulian Pinot Grigio that gives the possibility of our Pinot Grigio to be drinked in different way, to discover which potential this wine has, but also for the Pinot Grigio drinkers find a new way, as you say, to discover something new, you know. Pinot Grigio is not the lighter wine to drink. Pinot Grigio is wine with character and personality, and able to recall something different.
And talking about wines with character, we have Walter Scarborough character through a whole group of other wines too, including a wine called My Life. I didn't dare say My Time. I caught some Chardonnay in there. I thought, how can this be? And that was before we started on the red wines. But ladies and gentlemen, listeners, I think by now you probably have figured out that the best way to really appreciate these wines is to first of all find out where you can get them, whatever part of the world you're in, and www.scarbolo.com will help you with that. The other alternative, of course, is to fly to the city of Venice, which is only about 100 kilometers away. Come here and make your first stop at La Frasca, right on the road to Udine, between Udine and Grado, and do just exactly what we did, and remember to allow a whole day in your itinerary for this food and wine tasting experience. Walter, once again, you have succeeded in delaying our journey. As Anne quickly said happily, it has been such a pleasure to meet you and to talk to you. We understand that the future of Scarborough Wines is in good hands because your daughter is in enology school. And for reasons that escape us and possibly escape yourself, your son Mattia, who we talked to the last time, is now in San Francisco. So we're not sure whether he's going to return and when, but we will return and when, hopefully in less than a decade. In the meantime, thank you so much for being our host today and for talking to us at On the Menu.
Peter, thank you so much for your dedication, and thank you not just from me, but also from Friuli. Because in this moment I want to be ambassador of our region, you know. And today I would love that you appreciated our region, our terroir, and everything that our special soil donate us, no? And I hope that everybody decide to come or to test some Friulian products or wines, discover something unique from our region. Of course, that if you decide to land in Venice, coming to the United States, and you decide to go in the, not to stop on in Venice, but to take the highway to the east, I would love to host you in our Trattoria Ristorante, where you can taste also my wines, and I hope that you will be, those my wines are able to speak much better than me about our special region. Thank you, and bye-bye.
A word totally synonymous with grappa throughout Italy and, in fact, throughout the world is Nonino, the family that produces the top grade and greatest variety of grappa. We really enjoy the Nonino family. They are bright, fun, warm and welcoming, and we had a lovely lunch. We're going to be talking to some of the daughters, I believe. I can't remember who did anymore.
Just Antonella.
Oh, just Antonella did the interview.
Who's
wonderful.
But today was the spokesperson, although they all could be spokespeople.
Exactly.
And the next generation's getting ready to be spokers too.
So, spokers.
So here we have Antonella and Nonino speaking on behalf of her wonderful family. It was a chance meeting in southern Tuscany. I don't even remember how many years ago. I do remember it was Easter Sunday. That fate threw Anne and Peter on the Menu Radio together with a wonderful family called the Nonino family from Friuli in northeastern Italy. We're back again, and we're finding not only have traditional things not changed, but there are new things that are happening. So it's the beginning of the lunch hour, and we are sipping on a new cocktail. Antonella, tell us what we have here.
We just enjoy the Nonino tonic because my sister Elisabetta and I, we travel a lot around the world and we fall in love with the cocktails and mixologists. And as soon as we arrived from the last trip to United States, we had the idea last June to make the Nonino tonic that is like a gin tonic made with our grappa, because of course we are in love with our grappa. We know that in the past the grappa was also drunk during summer in order to get warm before also going in the countryside to work and to be comfortable also with high temperature. And the Nonino tonic is very refreshing, is very tasteful because we make our grappa, we still follow the tradition with the artisanal distillation, with the batch distillation. And the taste of Grappa Nonino in the Nonino tonic is really very pleasant. The aftertaste is very long. And we enjoy also as a long drink during lunch, for example, to go with the food. Especially with friends, and we are very happy to have you here with us.
Now, the making of grappa is an old tradition, and it's a tradition that goes back in the Nonino family for quite a long time. Take us through some of the important dates in that history, if you would, Antonella.
Our family distilled grappa since 1897. Orazio Nonino, the great-great-grandfather of Benito, had a pot still on wheel, and he used to go around the area to distill the leftover of the grape of the different family, rural family. Because in the past, of course, vineyards were owned by the owner of the land, and the rural people that had to work for the owner were very poor, and what they obtained from the distillation of the leftover of the wine was a very important part of the family economy. Grappa, in fact, was considered like a portable eater. People used to drink before going to work in the country, in the countryside, excuse me, and it was also a way to, for example, if you had a cough, like a medicine to help when you had a cough or you had an ache, for example, on your body. And the same happened in my family after Orazio Nonino arrived the other generation. And when my mother entered the Nonino family, and the Nonino grappa at that time in the 60s had already a very good reputation in our region, in Friuli, in the northeast of Italy. But she realized that the grappa was considered, still was always related to the rural culture and was considered like a rough distillate. So with Papa, she decided that she wanted that people that used to drink in nice occasion during party or celebration, cognac, whiskey or fruit distillate, they should taste also the grappa because the Grappa Nonino was very good. And so she decided that she wanted to make the best grappa in the world to attract the attention of that kind of customers. They made a lot of experiments from the 60s, and at the beginning of the 70s, in 1973, the 1st December, they had a revolutionary idea. They decided to distill the grappa not from the mixed variety of leftover of wines, but they decided to distill a single variety in order to bring the characteristic of single variety wine in the grappa. And they made the Grappa Monovitigno Picolite.
Now, I think you told us, or your mother told us, that people laughed at your father Benito when he started to do that and said, that will never go anywhere. That's a silly idea. That will never go anywhere. And that clearly has turned out not to be true. But you haven't stopped there, always trying to reinvent, to improve, to change the product line to be more in tune with the times.
We always, in the production process, we always followed and respected the tradition. But in the idea, in the fruit or primary products to distill, my parents always like to experiment, to make research. And after the Grappa Monovitigno, that really completely revolutionized our field, and enjoyed and has been appreciated from customers since 40 years. They had also the idea of distilling the grape. And in 1984, they decided to make a distillate from the entire grape, the stalk, fermenting the berry, and obtaining a distillate from the entire grape that is very, very nice, very rich, is intense like a grappa, but a little bit softer, because instead of having just the skin and part of the pulp, you have also the juice. And the grape distillate that we call the Ue, as a tribute to our tradition, to our Friuli, is also a way to start to approach grappa, because it's a little bit softer than the grappa, more delicate.
So it's more like a cognac, where the grape juice is a part of the beverage.
Yes, but it is a distillate that is not necessarily aged. So we have the aged Ue. So we have wonderful Riserva, like we have Grappa Riserva. We have La Riserva dei Cent'anni, that is a grape distillate aged 14 years or in barrique. And what is very important is that we follow a natural aging process, and we don't add any color to our Riserva. This is we always underline, we are very proud of offering a product that is very special and very high quality.
You mentioned sophisticated, and I think that there is sophisticated and also style, the very appearance of the product. You seem to have this concept of total quality. Your bottles are gorgeous. You mentioned your Riserva. That's a knockout bottle that the Riserva is in. We're sitting in a very stylish new compound called Borgo, or Borgo, which you can tell us about, which your mother apparently did all the interior design, along with your husband, who's an architect. But I figure that there is a very, very sophisticated quality to the branding of this product, as well as the quality of the product itself that carries the message.
Our mother grew up in a family where culture and knowledge of the tradition of this area of our region, knowledge of the story of our country has been always very important. And growing, she realized that the culture that is behind the grappa and the story of our family, of the family where she entered when she got married, was a very important culture that she wanted to respect, because together with grappa, we let know the tradition of our area. And Friuli is a rural area, and the rural culture has a very important value, family, respect of the product from nature, respect of the land, of earth. And in fact, with the years, our parents not only managed to make grappa appreciated from customers from all over the world, they always say that they are happy that they changed the grappa from a Cinderella to a queen of the distillate. But together with grappa, they also always underline the permanent value of the rural civilization. That is the civilization that is behind our life. Because when with industrial civilization, for years, rural civilization has been put a little bit aside, no? Not very considered. But when rural civilization would finish also life on the earth. And so this respect of tradition and of land push our parents to create a literary prize that underline the value of the rural culture. And next January we will celebrate the 40th anniversary of this Nonino Prize. And during all these years, in Percotto arrived Claude Lévi-Strauss, Peter Brook, Vidya Naipaul, Michel Pollan, Michael Pollan, Leonardo Sciascia, Sasha, Ermanno Olmi, Hans Jonas, so very, very important philosophers, writers, poets, that Edgar Morin, that underline all the values that are behind our life.
Anniversary is in January.
In January, because
January of next year.
No, he came to this event.
He won the prize.
He was awarded okay. The
now, did he actually come or did?
Yes.
He actually came to pick up his prize.
Yes.
This is absolutely amazing. This is you might almost call it the ultimate recycling project, because what is the raw material for grappa is something that ordinarily would just be thrown away. And instead of that, you take immense care to make sure that this is collected, that it's pure every single day. I was fascinated. The phone that rings to say I have some pumice to bring rings at your house, and they let them in
after 8 o'clock.
Okay, and that pumice will go into fermentation that very day.
This is fundamental. As I told you, my parents has always focused on the quality of the grappa, and in order to have an excellent grappa, you should start from the selection and from fresh primary product. That means leftover of the wine. So we collect the pomace from the wine producer the same day they crush the grape. We bring in our distillery, and we do a fermentation in stainless steel tanks in order to control the fermentation and to be sure that all the freshness of the bouquet will arrive in the final product. And in fact, as soon as the grape, the leftover of the grape is fermented, so the vinaccia, we distill with the batch distillation. And this is a process that is necessary in order to obtain quality. And for this reason, during harvest, we work 24 hours a day. During the day, we collect the primary product, but we distill also during the night in order that the freshness is really brought in the grappa, in the final product. Is the family that control all the steps of the process. Is my sister Cristina with Papa Benito, that now is 80 years old and is still during the distillation period, is still in the distillery controlling every part of grape that arrives to be sure that all the single part of the process is done in the correct way. And on that we are very, very strict and rigorous, and my sister Elisabetta organized all the turns in the distillery. And even if it is very expensive, because of course to work during the night and during weekend is more complicated from different point of view, is the only way to reach the best quality. And Nonino is the only distillery that followed.
So it's a fascinating combination of fine Italian design and style, if you like, and a fundamental belief that the traditional way of making grappa and of not taking any shortcuts is just a vitally important part of the process. So it's been absolutely fascinating.
I'm going to mention how extensive their market is. They have a world domination of the grappa market.
You said over 50% of your product is exported, and the Italian government is proud of you.
In fact, in 2003, the President of Italian Republic, Carlo Azeglio Ciampi, awarded our parents the Leonardo Prize for Italian Quality, and he stated that the Nonino are recognized for research innovation and are recognized as the true ambassadors for Italian grappa in the world. And in fact, we are very, very proud of them. And we are a family. We work all together. And I think this because this happened because we started when we were young to help Papa and Mama in the distillery, because the harvest period is very intense, very busy. And in a family business, you are obliged to work, even if you are young and you would like maybe to go out with friends, because also during the weekend, not only during the week, the work is very busy. And growing with them, we realized when we were grew up that we experienced a lot. And when we started to work full time, we had a lot of experience behind. Now that I'm 48, it's 30 years that I help my parents in the distillery, and also, and is another very fascinating part of our work, we travel abroad in order to introduce our grappa, to do training about the way you can combine our grappa, why our grappa is different from all the others, and how you can combine with food. Because another fascinating part is that we propose not only to drink the grappa after the meal, but also, for example, in combination with appetizer. We have a wonderful Picolite grappa crumo novitigno that is nowadays a legendary grappa, is the queen of the grappa in the world, that is perfect with the prosciutto, San Daniele or Parma aged, and with fig mustard, for example, is wonderful as an appetizer. Or you can prepare a wonderful risotto with our Riserva, grappa Riserva. Or you can have the grappa aged in barrique in combination with cheese, and of course with chocolate, with cigar, with wonderful a new combination.
Well, we're so pleased to have the opportunity to come back here after 10 years away. We thank you so much for your hospitality, Antonella, and for talking to our audience today. Thank you so much.
It was a great, great pleasure.
If by now you figured out that hospitality is the hallmark of Friuli, you got the right idea.
It sure
we're,
is.
We're so glad we've been able to share these recordings with you, and we'll be back same time, same place next week. Until then,
bye-bye.